Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome and thank you for visiting Booth 61. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing firm. And we are celebrating our fifth anniversary this month, and we're so excited. 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have the four founders on the show, and we're going to talk about not only Hunter, but we're also going to talk about what has happened in the IT staffing world over the last 15 years and how the business model changed. And I'm looking forward to that, and I hope we have a great audience, and I hope you all write in a lot of nice things because I need to keep this job. We're very excited about having you on the show today, and we're going to jump right in. But before we do, I want to introduce the producer of the program and my friend, Kevin Finn. Kevin's a master at the control board and a very accomplished host. Bumped into him yesterday at Micro Center. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing good, Ricky. Pleasure to see you as always.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you out in my neck of the woods yesterday.
Definitely. I'm putting together some computers for the studios out here. So.
Oh, cool. Well, needless to say, feel free to jump in at any point if you've got a question, because you got two really bright guys, and you know it's better to ask them a really bright question than it is to ask me.
Definitely, I'll definitely do that.
All right. I'm very excited about today's show on multiple levels. As those that followed this show for quite some time know that our goal for Booth 61 is to build community and to allow the rising tide to lift all the boats. Now, that community is not just the 5 miles around the station here, or the Georgia Tech campus, but the entire state of Georgia. I was born in Georgia 60 short years ago, and for other than a brief 4.5 months in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, I've lived in either Columbus or Atlanta all my life. I love Atlanta, but I also love our state. Today's guests are from the classic city of Athens, Georgia. It is the home of the University of Georgia. Let me repeat that again for my friends from that other technical college. The University of Georgia, which in 1785 became America's first state-chartered school. Now, a lot of you youngsters know Athens as the hotbed of great music, from REM to Widespread Panic, from Pylon to the B-52s, and too many other groups to mention. But Athens is a great, great community, and I spend a lot of time up there. My granddaughter, Sophia Marie, is there, and so I get to Athens as often as possible. I have two guests from Athens today. The first guest I'll introduce is a young man by the name of Jim Flannery. I first met Jim about 2 years ago. He's become a great friend and a trusted ally. Jim is the founder of 4Athens, which we'll talk about in great detail in a few minutes. 4Athens is an incubator in Athens, much like the ATDC and Atlanta Tech Village and other things we've got here in the community. Jim's also an avid entrepreneur, having started Deal Mobs in Athens, which, if I remember correctly, Jim, was sold to Half Off Depot here in Atlanta?
Yes, sir.
My second guest I'm meeting for the very first time today, but Art Recesso, PhD, is a friend of Jim Flannery, and any friend of Jim Flannery is already a friend of mine. So Art is the founder of Instructive Insight, which is an Atlanta startup actually housed in 4Athens, and we're going to talk about that whole experience. Art is also an entrepreneur, former college professor, and a very well-published author. The list of articles that I've skimmed through on his LinkedIn was just extensive. So without further ado, welcome to Booth 61, Jim, and welcome to Booth 61, Art.
Thanks for having us, Ricky.
Yeah, happy to be here.
We're very glad to have you down, and thanks for coming down from the great city of Athens to be with us today. Jim, why don't we get started with you, because a lot of the audience, especially the Atlanta folks, may not be familiar with 4Athens, even though a lot of Atlanta people are coming up to Athens to spend some time. I was up there recently, and Jackie Chu and Charlie Paparelli and other Atlanta, you know, superstars were there. But tell me the genesis of 4Athens, kind of how you got off the ground.
Sure. So about 4 years ago, I moved from San Francisco to Athens with the intent of starting a relationship with a female. That didn't work out very well, but I decided to stay in Athens. I absolutely love the town. And so I started a company. And through the experience of sort of starting that company and the struggles that I faced, I really saw a need in the community for other people that were like myself, that were entrepreneurs, that wanted to start a business but needed better connectivity. And so For Athens was birthed out of that with me and a couple of my partners, Nelson Wells and Jenny Morris and Lorianne Steele, to create an organization that would support the startup community and we focus on three pillars. We focus on message, which is holding educational events, providing, you know, discounted office space and connecting other entrepreneurs. So that's our first pillar. Our second pillar is mentors, which, like you mentioned, we have some great mentors both in Athens but also from Atlanta that come up and spend time and really help build the community. And then the third pillar is focused on money. So that's getting to your first customers or getting funding to help you really grow. Those are the three struggles that I really had when I started my first company. We're trying to create a process that helps other entrepreneurs sort of smooth that initial pathway.
You are not a University of Georgia graduate, but you live in Athens. You are a graduate of Princeton, if I recall.
Yes, sir.
Didn't have the grades to get in Georgia?
Didn't have the grades to get in. You joke, but I got rejected from a lot of schools, and Princeton was dumb enough to let me in.
Needless to say, that is my poor attempt at humor. Princeton is a very prestigious school that most anyone would be honored to have the opportunity of attending. But we're glad to have you in Athens, Georgia, beyond any question. For Athens, that name, is that the four pillars you were talking about?
That's sort of the four people that we believe that you need to start a tech company. And that's really based around sort of a business person, a sales marketing person, a tech person, and then sort of a everything else person, let's say. You can start a company with a lot less. I started my first company without sort of any tech side, but it was a lot more difficult to actually grow the business. And so we really try and focus on providing those. But as with everything, what we've built has sort of grown since we came up with it. We called it an incubator in the beginning because we didn't know any better. I would say that at this point, it's really evolved much differently than a traditional incubator that you'd think about. And it's much more a supportive community of people that sort of tries to leverage its size to help connect people better. So that name might need some evolution, but I think it still fits right now.
Well, having seen your new offices at the grand opening and having attended the older offices when you were first getting kind of off the ground in Jenny's space on the second floor there on Broad, tremendous evolution, but it does feel a lot more community-oriented. There was such a great vibe between all the entrepreneurs that were there that night. I thought they really cared for one another. They cared for each other's success. They know not everyone's going to walk out with a big check. But yet, I got the feeling that they all wanted everyone to walk out, and if it wasn't going to be them, they'd be just as happy it was the person in the office space next door. Am I far off?
No, not at all. We've really focused a lot on the last 2 years in terms of building a culture that is supportive, encouraging, but also aggressive. You know, we're trying to build big companies. We're not just trying to, you know, create lifestyle businesses. We really want to be able to give people in Athens the opportunity to create big businesses if they so choose. We've got a great resource in the University of Georgia with, you know, 35,000 undergrads. And every year you talk to any of them that are graduating and they all say, I wish I could stay here, but there's just no jobs. If you want a job, you're taking a job that's, you know, $8 or $9 tending bar. And for a lot of, you know, our best and brightest, we've got to do better than that. When I moved to Athens, I didn't have a job for a year and I applied everywhere. I applied to be a parking deck attendant and I couldn't get a job. And that's not a good sign for the local economy. And so I think we've really got to reimagine how we're creating jobs in these smaller communities in Georgia. And I think that For Athens is an attempt to do that and to build that community.
A parking garage attendant probably wasn't an elective at Princeton, was it? Probably was what held you back.
Maybe it should have been.
Well, again, as I said, Athens is very fortunate to have you there. How has the community responded? I've got anecdotal information from having been in the place several times, but overall, the community, I know you've had the mayor involved, and I know you've got some of the business leaders like Michael Ripps and others. So tell us a little bit about how the community's gotten involved with For Athens.
Sure. It's funny. I gave a talk last night in Augusta talking about how the broader community is really what's the most important part of a startup community as opposed to any one individual startup within. But when we started September 2011, Like you mentioned, you know, we started in a small space right in the middle of downtown. We could fit no more than 10 companies in it. Today, we're over 45 companies and a mentor network of over 60 people. And that has been due to the strength of the community, because I spend my time meeting not necessarily startups every day, but people that are connected to startups or who know startups. And it's been through their sort of introductions and their strength of introductions that lead them back into the For Athens community. And so I would say overall we've had a really supportive environment to grow in Athens, and it's been encouraging to see. Obviously, there can always be more done and more support necessary, but for, you know, almost 2 years in, I think things have been great. I don't even know actually how I met Art originally.
It was through Stefan Schultz,
okay,
the GRA Biobusiness Lab on UGA campus introduced the two of us, because I had a tech company at the time, a different company that was a startup. And I would say that that's really the magic of being a part of For Athens, is that I always felt like I had to go someplace else to find the connections for, you know, help with sales, help with marketing, development assistance, you know, trying to figure out some of these problems, these challenges that you've got as you're trying to get this company off the ground. And Jim and I met, and he had this vision that sounded like it was something that was exactly what the company needed, and becoming a part of the space actually helped me to evolve that out of that company, shut it down, and start a different company with another co-founder who is a brilliant engineer, and take off from there. And that's what's helped us grow.
That actually highlights, I think, two things. So we've got a great relationship with UGA, with Margaret Wagner Dahl. And then also, we met for the first time through Gordon Rogers at 151 Locust. Remember, we were pitching
that
night.
We were both pitching.
Pitching something. And but then it was, I think, Stefan who ultimately email introduced us. And that's, I think that that's the power of a connected community, to be able to find those people. Art's co-founder now was in our space working on another company. And it was, you know, a dual recognition from both of their sides that, hey, we have mutual talents that benefit each other.
You connected Chris Kwiatkowski and I together, who's the co-founder of mm-hmm. Constructive Insight, and you put the two of us together. And Chris and I actually had coffee together once a week for a year before we decided to start another company. We were both had several challenges working in the education space, very similar challenges, and decided to sunset our companies and start a new one together.
That's pretty exciting right there. I mean, that is, to me, the beautiful part about building community, and again, the rising tide, but everyone helping each other to the benefit of the entire community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That is fantastic. You know, one of the questions I had originally thought about asking was, why launch a company in Athens? But I think you've kind of already answered that, to create more opportunities and this, that, and the other. But what are some of the special challenges facing companies in Athens? I'm sure capital is one of them, but probably before For Athens, the community aspect was. But what are some of the other challenges? And either one of you can answer this one, of course.
Well, if I can jump in and go back to give a little commercial for Athens, maybe.
All right.
You know, beyond simply, creating jobs in the community, that's a great, you know, secondary effect. But I think why you would ever start a company in Athens is because it's a great, vibrant, innovative, young community that at the end of the day is incredibly cheap to live in. And so you can take, I think, outsized risks in a town like Athens that you couldn't take a lot of other places. I pay less for all of my living expenses than I paid just for rent alone in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And that really allows you to challenge what you're doing and stop and think. And then you've got a great talent pool, because every year you've got 5,000-6,000 really young, hungry students that want to get involved in something. And again, providing them that opportunity is a great benefit of starting the company. But, you know, when you look at why do it in the first place, great talent pool, very low cost of living, really innovative place to be.
And as you said, they want to stay in Athens. So if they can graduate and stay in Athens, mm-hmm. Athens was just voted maybe number two or three top retirement communities in the country, because people love to move there. I'll give a big shout out to Athens. My wife started a business in Athens 2 years ago. Today's actually the second anniversary. She's done extremely well. And one day when I retire, we will retire to Athens, Georgia, because we just love it up there. It's I tell people that in Athens, if you see somebody a half mile down the road about to pull onto Alps or Broad or whatever, people will stop and let you in. In some parts of Atlanta, they will shoot you. And no disrespect to all my friends in Atlanta, but we have some aggressive traffic violators here. And it's just a laid-back community, yet great food, great entertainment, so many wonderful things, you know, happening.
Yep, you have amazing people hanging around Athens doing other things like starting a band. Maybe they're, because their spouse is at the university following, you know, pursuing a PhD, or they're on a faculty hire. And what gave me confidence in starting a business in Athens was that I knew, running research projects on the campus, that I could go find these people that had MBAs, mm-hmm. that were playing in bands and hanging around Athens and were looking for, you know, a job that actually paid them some money, and they're just hanging out in Athens.
And, you know, Athens gets voted one of the top retirement communities, but I think it's because of, as we talked about, lack of jobs. When you're 20, you want to be there, and you know, it's the boomerang effect. You're there when you're 20 and you graduate and you leave. You come back when you're 50 or 60 because you can afford to come back because you don't need to work anymore. Mm-hmm. So we want to try and really plug that gap.
Plug the middle.
And I think if we do that, we end up with a lot more excitement. So, you know, and then to the challenges, there's absolutely challenges. It is a small town. It is still somewhat remote. Every place, I think, has capital challenges. Athens is no different. There is absolutely an investor class in Athens, just like there is anywhere else. It just takes finding it. There's a lot of education that has to go on in terms of what does it mean to be a mentor? What does it mean to be supportive of the startup community? That just takes time, though, and it's education. And I think otherwise, there's no challenge unique to Athens that you don't find any place else.
Well, you could go around Atlanta, Georgia today and ask about the excessive amounts of money in Atlanta, which if you were in Athens or Augusta, you would think, well, that's a great question because there's so much money here. Yet the answer would be, if we just had what they had in Silicon Valley, if we just had what they had in Austin or Boston or Research Triangle. So Atlanta cries for money just like everyone else. And that's just one of the things that happens.
You know, and I think that that's an important thing that as a state we need to focus on. I truly look at Georgia and say we've got almost everything that we need in-house. So maybe we should stop thinking about looking outside and say either how can we steal talent from somewhere else or how can we be more like them, and instead look internally and say, what can we take out of Savannah? What can we take out of Augusta? What can we take out of Athens to build the community? Because ultimately, Atlanta is the hub of the startup community in Georgia, and it always will be. I don't think you're going to have 1,000-person companies in Athens. I think you're going to have the small startups, the 1 to 2 people, then the 50 people, then the 500 people maybe, and then they're moving down to Atlanta. And so I think as a state as a whole, we need to focus heavily on how do we create better connectivity with these smaller towns. I mean, UGA is a massive school that particularly the Atlanta startup community should focus on hiring people out of. And yet we rarely see companies coming up to Athens to talk to these students. And so instead, these very bright students are going elsewhere. We just had a guy hired out, you know, out to the West Coast, and that's a constant story of Boulder and San Francisco and Austin, and, you know, why isn't it Atlanta? Why aren't these guys coming out of school that are getting jobs in startups that are clearly very bright getting jobs in Atlanta?
It's something we certainly should pursue. I know I've seen a lot of the recruiters, having been in the at PricewaterhouseCoopers at one point because of the great accounting school and business school, I've seen a lot of the recruiters from PricewaterhouseCoopers and Deloitte and some of the larger accounting firms really working that crowd. But I don't think the technology community, I guess because it's in Atlanta, we're so Georgia Tech-centric, and yet Georgia Tech's only turning out about 5,000 a year. And if it was 15,000, it would be better because there's a dearth of great talent. Mm-hmm. Sitting in the same chair you were sitting in 2 weeks ago, Jim, was Tino Mantella, who's the CEO of TAG. Most people listening will know what TAG is, but TAG is being very aggressive in trying to help build the connectivity around the state. I know yesterday you spoke in Augusta, and Heather Miner was there from TAG. Heather's just got a chapter with about 150 folks off the ground in Columbus, Georgia, and I think that at some point you and Heather are going to be talking about doing something in Athens as well. So that connectivity and building a bigger community, I think, is imperative for the entire state to be successful.
Absolutely.
Let's let's dig a little bit more into money. You worked hard, and you have created the first angel fund out of Athens, and I guess you closed on it not too long ago, and you've already made your first investment. What was the process like? Are all your investors from Athens, or from a little bit of everywhere? And what? How much did you raise? And kind of give us the history of the first For Athens fund.
Sure. So the majority of our investors are local, but you know, as is necessary, they came from where they came from. Almost everybody has some sort of connection back to either Athens or UGA. And this first fund is truly an example of, hey, can we invest in local communities? Can we find good opportunities here to start to build on that and make, you know, more and more connectivity amongst the investor class? And it's a lot of education. As you mentioned, you know, you were up for that event at the end of March where Charlie Pepperelli and Gordon Rogers and Matt Dunbar from Greenville spoke. And it was an educational evening. And out of that, you know, there were 20 or 30 people in the room. And out of that, I think we've gotten about 3 or 4 people to actively start looking at deals in the area. Raising money is always hard. I don't think it really ever gets easier necessarily. I just read a Brad Feld post just recently that said in 2007 or 8 when he went to go raise his first Foundry Group fund that he got 87 no's before he got to a yes. And that's depressing. But I think that you know, proves a point that someone, you know, as well-regarded and as well-respected as Brad Feld still gets, you know, a ton of no's. We're really aiming for this first fund to be educational in talking even to entrepreneurs. What I find here, so when I was in San Francisco, I helped early stage companies raise capital. And there was a lot less education required to get the entrepreneurs to the point where they could appropriately even go to investors. They sort of knew where they had to be already. What I find a lot here is that we do a lot of work with the entrepreneurs to get them up to the stage that they're actually ready and their company's at a point where it makes sense for them to be raising capital. And so our group of investors is very hands-on and very mentor-driven in that sense, where they'll go spend time with a lot of these entrepreneurs and talk through where they are today, where they need to get before they're even able to start talking about capital. But in general, you know, we just want to see more money flowing with the recent introduction of, you know, crowdfunding laws in Georgia. I'm excited to see how that shapes up. But I think more early stage capital is important, particularly for the smaller communities around Atlanta, to allow some of these people to test their idea out for a year or 18 months, whatever it is. And that's what this first fund is focused on.
Well, it's a period of time to make anything like this work. But if you look back at Atlanta, had John Imlay not been successful with MSA, I'm not sure we wouldn't all be talking about Research Triangle or some other place or maybe Mobile or what have you. He created Imlay Investments, and Sig Mosley, who worked for him at the time, moved positions and took over that fund. And that was really the seed, and that created or helped create ISS. And now Chris Kloss and Tom Noonan are now successful entrepreneurs that sold IBM for $1 billion. Now they're doing that. They just, Jolex just became a great success. I think Chris has got Kineva right now. Two great entrepreneurs are keeping the money here. Another example, someone sat in your chair a month or two ago, David Cummings. Again, tremendous success story, but is continuing to invest in the community. And as you have a couple of successful exits, as those people decide to stay in Athens and to reinvest in the community, then it becomes the rolling rock downhill. But it takes perseverance. You know, Atlanta wasn't an overnight great success in raising funds or starting companies. But, you know, 25, 30 years, you're still a young man. You'll see this come to fruition.
and we believe in that. And the internal team at For Athens has a 20-year vision, you know. We're aggressive and just like anyone else in terms of growing things out, but we recognize the reality that this is going to take 20 years, and in 20 years we could still be dead wrong. But you know, it's at least been a really informative period. And we look at guys like Art and we say, hey, you know, this is a company that could imprint itself on Athens. It's a startup that I think you're going to see more of in Athens in terms of what is our talent in Athens and its education. And since EdTech is such a booming space right now, it's exciting to see companies like this start up.
I got a couple other questions for you, Jim, but I think you just give me a great segue because I'd love to hear from Art a little bit.
Thanks, Jim.
And then we may get some of these questions again, and then again we may not. Art, again, thank you for being here, and thank you for contributing and being part of 4Athens. But tell me about your company, Instructive Insight. How long have you been going? What are the problems that you're facing, and what is the solution? Or what is the problem that your company is solving for the education field?
Okay, we've built a web application for crowdsourcing teacher observation, which is a considerable problem in every school system throughout the country. My co-founder, Chris Kwiatkowski, and I formally joined and started the company in February of this year, looking at a significant issue that we'd seen over the years. I have roughly 18 years experience in education, worked in hundreds of schools around the country with a lot of teachers, principals, and administrators. And one of the great challenges is that every teacher needs to be observed multiple times every school year. So that amounts to roughly 20 million teachers in the building to do the observations, when actually there's a capacity of millions and millions of qualified people to do teacher observations. And the way the model is built right now, it's very difficult. Let's take the example of a rural school in Georgia that might have one science teacher in the building, and now they need another science teacher to observe and assist that teacher. Where are they going to get that person from? Well, there's actually a lot of them throughout the country. Highly qualified people who may be retired, they may be other teachers in a different district, they may be faculty at a university that could be there supporting that teacher, but at a distance and providing the kind of observations and detailed feedback that that teacher wants and needs. So we've built a web application that connects that capacity, the millions of people that are out there available to do these observations, with the need, an increasing high stakes need, to observe those teachers and provide them the feedback that they're looking for.
The cynic in me immediately wonders how well the unions are going to like this application. What kind of bounce back are you getting there? Because those that want to, those that are shooting for the middle or to get by to keep their jobs, would not be well suited by this form of evaluation.
We wondered about that. So we've discussed it with union leaders, especially in heavily unionized states like New York and New Jersey and around the country, and we've actually found support for it.
Wow.
Because it's an objective observation. A lot of times where a union has trouble with the evaluation model and the evaluation methodology is that you can have administrators who are portrayed as trying to get the teacher, trying to get rid of them for whatever reason, either politics or just trying to weed them out of the system. And here you can bring in someone and pair them with a peer. So if you are a ninth grade science teacher in a rural school, we can connect you with a ninth grade science teacher in a rural school who understands what it is that should be that you're looking for in the classroom, what kind of support. They know the day-to-day struggles of that person that's trying to teach phases of the moon with just models of tennis balls and basketballs in the classroom. They don't have anything, you know, fancy to teach with. So in that respect, we find support for it. Part of our technology is a video-based observation technology. And so Randy Weingarten, who's head of the NEA, has actually come out in support of that with Bill Gates as a way to help and support teachers using video observation.
Well, I think it's revolutionary and something that I think could be a great, great, great asset to the school system, because we're spending a lot of money on education, but we're not turning out bright students.
Well, I think... We have our challenges. I think we're so focused on student achievement And we're so focused on using test scores to evaluate teachers. And I've been a proponent for many years now, to get on my soapbox sort of, is to say that we shouldn't do that. There's actually limited data, no causal link between student achievement and teacher quality. And so those models actually should go away. And a better approach is to use other evidence that you can combine together. Now, student achievement is a good data point. It gives you a sense of what that student knows on a given day within a particular subdomain area. But here we can back out with video technologies, capture of instructional materials, evidence from the classroom to begin to explain what really went on. Think of it in a way that you could rewind a school year, technically. It's so inexpensive to capture video technology and store it that you could get to the end of the year, look at your student achievement test scores, and actually rewind to the day that was taught. Now, initially, we're going to blame the teacher. That's what's going on right now. It's the teacher's fault. They must not have taught it correctly. When actually, if you look at different forms of evidence, it can better explain what's going on in that classroom. And that's where these technologies come into play, is now I can take different forms of evidence, actually explain, well, actually, you know, maybe it was the instructional materials. Maybe there wasn't a book available. Maybe there weren't the resources in the classroom. And then again, maybe it was the content knowledge of the teacher, but now we know, and we can explain it with a high level of certainty. And we do that, again, by bringing in other people who are experts that are knowledgeable and experienced in that same area as the teacher to help them and guide them through these challenges that they have with the students in the classroom.
Well, I see it also, because I'm a huge proponent of education, maybe being able to observe the students as well, because a student that's hungry is not going to be able to learn as a student with a full belly. A student that comes out of a tough family environment or no family environment is going to have a tougher time. So, again, do we need better teachers or teachers, some teachers that perhaps do a better job? No question about it. But I think it's more of a holistic look, and I think if it's evaluating on both sides of it, and again, we are so far off the material that we said we were going to talk about because I want to know more about your company, but this is something that's passionate to me because I just think we're, you know, we got too many kids getting out of school that can't read or write, and it just breaks my heart because I love these kids, and I want to see so much better for them, and anything that will help them, you know, I'll give you money.
Well, that's actually why Instructive Insight is focused on the teacher. A lot of companies are focusing on student learning, learning management systems, content, gaming within the classroom, which is great stuff. It's a notable thing to be involved in. But we have focused on the teacher primarily because if you have, statistics show, research shows that if you have two teachers in a row that are of low quality for a student, then the reality of them being a success later in the life is much more challenging. And so we're actually tackling that problem, is that can we boost the quality of teaching by supporting the teachers with the people that they need, not just who's available in the building.
Well, that's a great passion part of it. One of my heroes and role models is a guy named Ron Clark, who served on his original board of trustees. And if you go watch Ron Clark teach, it's like putting your finger in an electric socket. It just blows your mind. And not everyone can do that. Not everyone can be Ron Clark. Not everybody can be the Beatles or Elvis or, you know, whoever. But you can still have some passion to what you do, and I think that translates in the whole experience. But getting back to Instructive Insight, how are you going to distribute the product or distribute the system? Will your end client be the school systems, the Board of Education? What's your business model?
It's a software as a service, so it's okay. Completely web-based. And the school system, potentially school buildings, are the customer. They'll be able to purchase tokens through the system that they can accumulate credits and then purchase the observations. We gather the profiles of the observers. We vet them. We are the ones that say that this is the highly credentialed observer available to the school system. And then the school system gets the choice of either choosing their observers or they can use our algorithm that is, in a sense, a matchmaking algorithm that says, based on these teachers' needs, they could be based on annual goals, it could be based on past performance from student achievement test scores, whatever the principal would like to define, we match those needs with the people who have said, I'm available and I have that expertise, and we've vetted those people and put them in the database.
Mm-hmm. You've touched around this, but I want to maybe give you the opportunity to go in a little bit deeper. You know, tell me more about the teacher observation, focusing on teacher observation, where most ed tech companies are focusing on the Common Core, student learning, testing, and all the models that we've talked about. I think you've narrowed it down and maybe go into that in a little more depth.
There's actually two processes that can happen there. The principal and assistant principal will define when the observation takes place and whether it's a drop-in or, I guess, what they would call an unannounced observation or a regular traditional observation. And during that time, the teacher is able to take any kind of video capture device. It could be a cell phone, a video camera that's available to them, capture the classroom, the time period, easily upload it into the system, and then it becomes securely available to the observer who's been connected with that teacher. So it's a very simple, straightforward process. Most folks have done this through either YouTube or Facebook as they upload their kids' videos. We see more and more teachers in the classroom capturing video of their own instruction to put into their electronic portfolios for the end of the year. And so we're building along those lines.
How did you and your partner develop this technology?
Well, actually, Chris and I were working in the education sector on two different problems. He came at it with a web-based system that collected meeting notes and tracked people's progress through meetings, typically the kind of things that you might request the Freedom of Information Act later on to understand how decisions were made. And I had been working on video-based technology for some years now. And so we built one new system that brings all of that together.
That's pretty neat. Who's using your system now? I mean, you've only been going since February, although you've been working on this mentally for quite some period of time.
For a long time, it feels like, maybe most of my life. We have a few school systems that are customers already, but the majority of our partners, we dove into the university market for the observation of student teachers and nursing students. So we have 30 universities in the U.S. that are signing on with us, and we have a few outside of the U.S. that are using us in the area of mental health interventions.
So you're past beta. You're in real customers and real revenue.
We're moving along.
That's great. Congratulations. What has it been like to be in Fort Athens? I mean, we touched on that a little bit earlier, but, you know, you're in a community. We've talked about a community, but what have been the other attributes that have helped you get to where you are today? I mean, February, and you already got real customers paying you money? That should have been the camera shot. You should have observed that whole entire process and sold it for millions and millions of dollars.
We hope. I love being a part of Fort Athens. It's the space that I wanted to be in. It's connected me with so many people that have knowledge in so many different areas that I don't have. So I have an education background. Chris, my co-founder, is a software engineer, so we've got that nailed down. Where we needed assistance is understanding sales and marketing and things like that, that there's people out there who understand, you know, the social media networks much better than us, and they could sit down with us and share it with us. We have weekly meetings with folks who are struggling with the same thing. So I think we're probably the only ed tech company. No, there's one other ed tech company in the space. IS3D, and then are there others?
Literacy Head,
too. Yeah, so there's a few ed tech companies. I guess my point is that it's not all ed tech. It's people in the technology arena, and we're struggling with very similar things. So hearing John Posey from Products for Robots struggling with some things that he's doing with his company, his gaming company, I can sit there and relate to that and take something away from what he's learned or what he's figured out, or, you know, Chris with Waggles. So for me, I just like being a part of people that are struggling with the same things. They have the same challenges, can ask them questions and watch them work through it and either learn or, you know, provide some advice at times.
And I think that that's really important, that we're not focused on one business sector. We really do believe in sort of the spontaneous interaction model where there's a lot of underlying problems. And so as For Athens, we really sit there and try and find the underlying themes. And it's pretty interesting to watch how cyclical a lot of these things are. When you start seeing someone face a problem, you'll all of a sudden notice that 10 other people are facing the same problem. And then you can create a solution that helps that whole group of people. But if you were focused, I think, a lot on like, let's say, just ed tech or you know, something along those lines, I think your focus would be way too narrow, and I think you'd miss some of these underlying trends.
Jim, this is kind of plays into that same train of thought. I had not looked at your new website for quite some time, or I had not looked at the new website in a while. You must have 30 outside advisors that are people giving their time, energy, and resources to come. That's pretty impressive. How were you able to recruit that many folks? And they're all, and many of them are named players that I know, and not from having done business with them, but just know who they are. I've read about them in the Business Chronicle or in the Athens Banner Herald or somewhere or another.
We actually have closer to 60.
60. That's close to 30. It's only twice as many.
That is that's that Princeton math for you. you know, I think you can thank Lorianne for that. A big focus of ours is on how do you get good quality mentors? How do you get the right people in the space? And then how do you indoctrinate them, maybe is the word, into the culture that you would like to see them in a mentor role? How do they give freely and without expectation? How do they dedicate time to sort of helping these companies grow? You know, we're not a free love hippie, you know, attitude where we don't like to make money, but we do believe that there has to be a spirit of openness and giving in order to sort of build this community. And I've been really excited to see the mentors that come out of Atlanta. You know, not just Jackie Chu, who spends time up here, but Mike Gomez and Mike Addison and Paul Valcheff and countless
Rogers.
Others. Gordon Rogers is up.
Yeah.
You know, countless people who dedicate, you know, a whole day, a month. That's a lot of time. You know, the months slip by me, and we're already in June here. That's a ton of time for someone to dedicate, particularly someone who's as busy and successful as these people are. But I think it speaks to the volume of people believing that, you know, by giving back to the community, they're going to see the benefit come back to them.
Well, just for example, I'm very good friends with both Jackie and Gordon, think the world of them. They make a living on selling their time. So if they give you 8 hours, that's 8 hours they're not selling to someone else. Now, do they assure in the back of their mind at some point think that there might be an opportunity? You know, they would just have to think that because it's just the way the world works. But for them to bet all of it on the front end, I think that speaks volumes of the character of those two individuals and probably the other 58 folks that you have as well. So that's a huge bonus.
Absolutely. And I think that over time that will grow. Building a mentor network is something that we're absolutely still just learning. You know, I would say if you looked at our website 6 months ago versus today, the even bigger change is how many events are now being held up in Athens that surround the tech community and the startup community. And most of those are not driven by For Athens in terms of we don't actually organize and run the event, but we provide the resources to help other leaders in the community step up and say, this is an unmet need that I would like to see filled. And then they come to us and we're able to connect them with not only attendees, but sponsors and space and everything else that they might need to run it. But we never want For Athens to sort of be the bottleneck at the top of the food, you know, chain that stops everything and says this can go ahead and this can't. We really want to view ourselves as sort of a foundation that helps other people build on top of it. And so I've been impressed, and I think that the quality of our events has increased as well as the quantity. You know, our longest running event is a happy hour that we've held every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for over 2 years now. That's actually the genesis of For Athens was a happy hour, and it's jumped all over town, but thank goodness that Athens has plenty of bars in downtown, so we can always keep it fresh. But, you know, even right after this, you know, we've got meetings all lined up through the night, and they kind of start at happy hour, and they build from there.
And you're back in Athens tonight, I assume. You're not starting and drinking in Atlanta then driving home, are you?
No, sir. Well, so we were in Augusta yesterday. I'm going to be in Atlanta today. I'll be in Atlanta again tomorrow. Spend a lot of time down here. But, you know, similarly, I think we're seeing more and more people come up to Athens and spend time in that community.
I was amazed at the number of events on the site. And And I think having Margaret involved, too, she's such an institution in Athens and at the University of Georgia. I mean, that's high cotton where I come from.
Margaret's been a great partner, and, you know, the university system can be daunting to deal with when you sort of approach it from an outsider perspective, and it's just this sort of monolithic entity that you don't even know the first person to talk to, or you can spend 3 years talking to 20 people that actually can't help you. And Margaret's been a big supporter since day one. I mean, the probably within the first month or two of us starting, we went to visit her, and she gave us all of her documentation that they had used to launch the Synergy Center, which was an attempt in sort of the early 2000s to start a co-working space like this in downtown. Just been very freely giving. She sat on a panel for Hack for Athens last weekend at, I think, 10 p.m. on Sunday night.
Good gracious.
So she's been a great influence and help in building that community.
And Chris has been active with you as well.
Chris Hanks has been very active, and we've got a great board of business leaders in Athens. Michael Ripps, who is a co-owner of Jittery Joe's Coffee, but he has a tech background behind that. And then Bob Pinkney from EvoShield, who has a background in telecom for years and years and years before he came to Athens. And then David Lowery, who is the lead singer of Cracker and Kemper Van Beethoven, but is also a big tech guy and a big supporter of the local startup scene. He was an angel investor in Athens before there were angel investors in Athens, and he's been a great.
And yet
connection.
He lives in Virginia.
No, he's married to somebody in Athens, and in fact, someone as well respected and well known as David Lowery wasn't living full time in Athens because he didn't have a job.
Right.
but he now teaches at the university.
Oh, he does. Okay.
And so he spends the year there, and then he lives in Virginia, you know, in the summer.
I knew he spent a lot of time in Virginia.
Yep.
But he spends a lot of time in Athens as well. Well, that's great. It gives you a little more something interesting to talk about. Well, I could literally make this a 2-hour show because I love Athens, and I love what you're doing, and the people that you have involved, and I'd like to invite you back in the next couple of weeks, month, whatever, and bring a couple other companies with you. And maybe at an event in the not-too-distant future, we'll do a live remote, a Business Radio X Booth 61 from Athens at 4 Athens. We've done it at the Digital Ball. We do it at the Atlanta CEO Council. And maybe we'll pack up the equipment and come to Athens and do a live remote. That would be a lot of fun.
That'd be great. We'd love that.
Well, thank you all both for being here. It's been a great blessing for me, and I know I've learned a lot, and I'm sure the people in the audience have learned a lot. And the sad part is 50 minutes has come and gone like that, and I'd like to have another 50 minutes, but we do have a reason to have you back. But closing comments, first I want to make sure both of you, name, email, website. How does somebody get a hold of you if they wanted to invest, if they had a company they wanted to talk about, or perhaps someone on the educational side that wants more information, Art? Both of you give your a closing comment as well as your contact information.
Sure. I'm really excited to watch the Georgia startup community grow over the next 20 years that I'm investing in this, and I think great things have been happening. I'm really excited to watch what's been happening in Atlanta, and I hope that you know, expands over the entire state. People are interested in getting in touch, they can go to our website, which is For Athens, and that's forathens.com, or you can just email me directly at jim@forathens.com. I try to answer every email within 4 hours, but that very rarely happens.
As he's driving to Atlanta.
Don't say that on the air.
Well. Whoops.
We're just teasing.
If folks can get a hold of me, Art Recesso, art@instructiveinsight.com. Instructiveinsight.com is our website, and happy to field any questions about that. Or if there's school system folks out there that want to talk to us, happy to come show them what we're doing.
Well, I wish you well, Art, and your partner. The young people of America deserve a great shot, and whatever you can do to help that come to fruition, I will sing at your wedding and dance at your events and do anything in the world, because we need a great strong workforce going forward, but just as human dignity, we need to be giving these kids the best chance they can of getting a good education, and I don't think we do that as well as we could or should do. So anyway, I'm getting off my soapbox to say good night or good afternoon. This is Ricky Steele. I've finished my coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next Wednesday or by listening to any of our past shows at Booth 61 with Ricky Steele. I always try to close our time together by sharing a blessing, hopefully for you, for your family, and for your business. The blessing comes from the book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen. And thank you for dropping by. Join us next week for a fresh cup in Booth 61.